This is the Detroit Sports Podcast Network.
The biggest icon in podcasting.
Welcome in, everyone, to this week's edition of the Doc and Jock Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, Adam the Jock Straczynski. On today's show, major contract signings or extensions in WWE. This AEW star is set for a return very soon. And Vince McMahon, is he done completely with WWE? We've got a AEW Dynasty pay-per-view. We've got a review. We've got crazy things happening at the end of Dynamite. We've got WWE with their draft going on. We've got a whole lot to break down and get into. Doing it with me, as always, he's the one. He's the only. He is the Doc, John Macaroon. What's up, cuz?
Detroit Sports Podcast would like to send our best wishes for Tony Khan after his devastating attack on Dynamite. We saw that he was also featured on NFL Network wearing a neck brace. We hope that his recovery is filled with positivity and that he can get back to being the Dynamite and AEW leader that we all know he can be. What's up, cuz?
Kayfabe libs, baby. Kayfabe libs.
Oh, man. It was crazy, man. AEW is trying to do some things in regards to blurring the lines of reality and what goes on in the wrestling ring. And it's interesting, too, because I'm not sure people are receiving it well. We'll talk about that later with Dynasty. Cuz, the pay-per-view, when we look at Dynasty as a whole, look, when you got a match that really was received well, look, if you don't want to watch the pay-per-view, fine, but take the 35 minutes and watch Will Ospreay versus Bryan Danielson. It was a match of the year candidate, probably among the top six matches I've ever watched. I enjoyed it. And obviously, we're going to give credit to the performers, but the crowd just was like, okay, this is what I ordered, this is what I wanted, and they were so into it from start to finish, it didn't feel like a 35-minute match. It made the pay-per-view, and in the end, you could have had a three-match pay-per-view if you had those guys fight because it was that high quality. It lived up to some of the best matches you're ever going to see, and it just brought up a pay-per-view that probably had, because I don't know if you got that sense, it felt like it had a lot of filler in the middle, and just was highlighted by the three matches at the end. But my God, did Will Ospreay please just highlight him, get him some belts, more Will Ospreay, and Bryan Danielson, kudos for delivering with one of the best performers in the world. Wow. It made it, listen, Dynasty will be obviously known for a couple other things as well, but it'll be known for Ospreay Danielson 1. Wow.
Yeah, it really did feel like this pay-per-view was sluggish at times, and it really felt like it took a little bit to get into it, but the Ospreay-Danielson match really set it on fire. It arguably one of the best matches ever. It was absolutely fantastic. And then that was followed up quickly with the Bucks and FTR. There's a whole lot that went on there. And then you had Swerve and Joe, and we're going to talk about the results of that. And it, to me, the back end of this pay-per-view really helped save it. So let's just kind of get into these results real quick, and we'll work our way to the back where we've got quite a bit to talk about. Trent Beretta ends up defeating Matt Sydal via submission. After that, he ends up calling out Chuck Taylor and basically tells him that on Dynamite, he needs his answer whether he stands with him or not. Cassidy and Shibata end up defeating Shane Taylor and Lee Moriarty via pinfall. The Bang Bang Gang end up defeating the Acclaim via pinfall. Now they unify the ROH and AEW Trios titles. Okada ended up defeating Pac via pinfall to retain the Continental Classic. This was a good match. This was a really good opener. It didn't quite hit the levels that the back end of this pay-per-view hit, but this was a really good match. This is where you won the point. You won the point with the House of Black defeating Adam Copeland, Eddie Kingston, and Jay Briscoe via pinfall. Now, Willow Nightingale defeats Julia Hart via pinfall to win the TBS title. Now, we're doing our predictions. I don't know why I didn't think ahead. I was kind of caught up in the moment. Obviously, Willow Nightingale and Mercedes Moné make sense to have them fight again. Again, Mercedes Moné got hurt in the match against Willow Nightingale, and that was why she did not have the opportunity to win the New Japan Women's Strong Belt. Willow Nightingale was the inaugural champion there. Also, it sounds like Julia Hart may actually be dealing with a bit of a real-life injury. There was some concerns about that. There were a little bit of rumor, a little bit of speculation. We never really touched on it because we couldn't get any confirmation, and we couldn't find out one way or another, so we just kind of let dead dogs lie. But sounds like she might actually be dealing with an injury, and this is a way to get the belt off of her. And you can set up now the Willow Nightingale and Mercedes Moné story going forward. Roderick Strong ends up defeating Kyle O'Reilly via pinfall to retain the international championship. You've seen a return of Adam Cole. He should be getting back into the ring here very shortly. Looks like they're teasing some dissension with Wardlow. We'll see how this works out. We've kind of had this happen before. The thing about this is you've got to do a really good job of booking this group because you've kind of booked it into oblivion. Cool, Roderick Strong got a win over Kyle O'Reilly, but you're going to have to do some really good things because this has not been a strongly booked group with the Undisputed Kingdom. Chris Jericho ends up defeating Hook to win the FTW Championship. Tony Storm ends up defeating Thunder Rosa to via pinfall to retain the AEW Women's Championship. And then you get into the Will Ospreay-Brian Danielson match, which we've kind of touched on. Match of the year for sure. I know it's early still, but I think this one's going to hold the test of time. It was an absolutely fantastic match. What did you think about the angle at the end? It's come out that Brian Danielson was not hurt. It was more of an angle to sell stuff. What did you think about Brian Danielson selling an injury, having to be helped to the back, Will Ospreay showing the concern that he was hurt? What were your thoughts on Brian Danielson and them doing an injury angle, especially with a guy who has a history of neck and head injuries?
Yeah, when he started shaking his legs like that, everybody thought that, oh, he landed on his shoulder awkwardly. Look, that's the toughest when you blur the lines of reality and an injury. But look, as long as he's okay, then we can get emotionally invested. It was a crazy finisher. That one, it seems like you got to make sure you land properly. But that's, again, when you look at the move in its totality, when Will Ospreay picks somebody up and then drops him, if you bump properly, you should take the brunt of the weight all over your back and not flip over. So look, professional wrestling is all about body control from both people. If Brian Danielson is willing to do these moves, it was crazy, man, to see Will Ospreay lift him up and then flip him back on his neck and shoulder. But hey, that's part of the game, unfortunately, is selling. And that's the toughest part, is that when you do sell, people kind of are wondering, oh my God, is Brian Danielson really hurt because of his history of concussions? But thankfully, it was a work, and that's all you can ask for, is that both parties can continue their careers, because both really highlight what really the name of professional wrestling is get the crowd invested, have them in the palm of your hands, and then deliver with move after move after move after move that just highlighted what these guys can do. I'm ready for Danielson Ospreay too. It was special. It was awesome. And the crowd really, again, they just ate it up because they were into it. They chanted. They wanted to see these guys rock out and do what they can do best. And for them to perform, it's a testament to what these two can do, because really probably two of the best wrestlers that company has, and their box office. You put that on, you could sell that for many, many, many years. And hopefully there's more opportunities that these guys can have to showcase what they're about, because my goodness, what a match. Match of the year candidate, top match of all time. Probably got over 5 stars from the graders. Oh my goodness, what a match.
6.5 for Meltz.
6.5. That's how great it was received. And everybody that's watched it, watch it again, because it was awesome. And I got lucky in that, you know, there's a couple people online that are starting to take matches and just throw them up there on Twitter before. And I watched it up until the last 4 seconds. And then right when I was watching it, Tony Khan hit the letter and it got cut off. So you can find it online in some places, but if you go back and get a chance to see it, whew, well worth your 35 minutes.
Yeah, incredible match. If you haven't seen it, go find it. It was great. This then led into the Young Bucks taking on FTR. The Young Bucks end up defeating FTR to win the vacant AEW tag titles, but they had the help of Jack Perry. Jack Perry shows up early. Security tries to make it so he can't come in. And actually, that happened on Dynamite. Jack Perry ends up coming through the crowd and pushing a ladder over when FTR was fingertips away from reaching the belt. Security ends up jumping into the ring with Jack Perry. They unmask him, and you find out it's Jack Perry. Young Bucks end up winning the title. I thought this was a fun match. This was a lot of fun. And I think with the Young Bucks, especially with what we've seen on Dynamite and what we're seeing with Jack Perry now, I think you're taking some of the stuff that took place in real life and you're, like you said, you're kind of spinning it into wrestling. And I think with the Young Bucks and these new characters, you're getting a bit of a shakeup with AEW. You're getting a bit of a shakeup with this roster. You're getting a bit of a shakeup with storylines that you've had. This is like the first time in 5 years where we've kind of had a bit of a heel authority figure in AEW, and the Young Bucks are really kind of feeling like they're running things, and they're running roughshod, and they're running as bullies. And them getting the AEW tag titles, I think was the right call. I think this was fantastic. I thought this was a really, really good match, especially coming off of the heels of the Will Ospreay, Brian Danielson match. What did you think of this match? What did you think about the interference from Jack Perry?
It was, you know, it's a story that's told that's really interesting, knowing that Jack Perry was the scapegoat, knowing that he went to Japan. I feel like they buried the hatchet and they told the story in a way that makes him interesting. And that's all you can really ask for, is that this is a guy that was, you know, targeted by CM Punk, and there's a lot of controversy surrounding Jack Perry. And what did we say when there was the CM Punk, you know, situation at AEW? Why isn't AEW taking advantage of this and making matches, making angles, taking a story that is behind the scenes and bringing it out in front? Well, guess what? The fucking light bulb went off for these guys. Oh, Jack Perry's interesting. Jack Perry is someone that's controversial. Let's put him on television. Let's see if there's some money to be made with these guys. Hey, someone pulled up their creative boots and figured out how to make some money. And maybe as we talk about it further, maybe the owner of AEW is trying to do the same thing. But we'll see how it plays out and how it's received moving forward. But Jack Perry, the ultimate heel, I'm down for it. I can get invested in that.
Yeah, and look, you're right about this, right? You have this story not just takes Jack Perry, who seems interesting, right, or is an interesting character, and takes what's going on in the backstage and pulls it to the forefront. But in the process of doing this, you're helping to elevate a guy like Jack Perry. Remember, Jack Perry was considered one of the four pillars of AEW. He was in that discussion of being one of the guys that they wanted to help build this new company around. Jack Perry was one of those guys, and he was basically banished for the last 8 months. Now he's back, and now he is in that main event category. He is now a guy who is must see. He's a guy who's a draw. He's a guy who, like you said, is interesting, and they're working stories around him, which is fantastic to see. Like, not enough young guys get that push, so that's great. That then brings us to our main event. And we've got Swerve taking on Samoa Joe. Swerve defeats Samoa Joe via pinfall to win the AEW championship. Look, really, really good match. I think when you really boil it down, right decision. Swerve getting the belt. Swerve's been hot, white hot. He's been so over. You honestly could have put the belt on Swerve right after Joe won it. It would have been a little bit of a disservice to Joe. I understand you wanting to keep it on him for a little bit longer just to give him a little bit of a title run and for him not to seem so transitional as a champion. But Swerve winning it, right call, good match, sent the crowd home happy. What did you think about the AEW championship match where Swerve defeats Samoa Joe?
Yeah, no doubt about it. You had to. The buzz for Samoa Joe being the champion just wasn't there. I think you got a lot of extra run from Swerve winning it just due to his race, just due to the situation, just due to the guy that he was. And even on the smallest scale, if you can get a performer from another company to shout you out, that's a bonus. Kofi Kingston, who I got to meet at the 2024 NFL draft, we'll talk about that a little later, shouts out that, hey, Swerve won it. That's a bonus. That just draws a little bit more eyes to a company that needs as many eyes as possible to see what's been going on. So Swerve winning it was perfect for business, and he earned it. Like, he's the most over. He's the biggest, you know, big-time star, and he's got everything that you would want. Can perform in the ring. You want to see what the hell he's doing. He's got a manager that draws eyes to him, and now you got to develop the character just that much more for a guy that has a very high ceiling. So now you give him the belt, and now let's see what kind of run he's going to have. And every run is highlighted by the matches that you are able to bring. And I think that he'll be able to at least sell a couple more tickets than I think Samoa Joe would ever do.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Look, it was a good pay-per-view coming off the heels of the pay-per-view. You get the point because of the House of Black match. 1.5 to 2.5, like you said, I might have given you the match there, and I did. So now it is, again, 1.5 to 2.5 and calling the card. This all kind of brings us to Wednesday night. Wednesday night, you have Jack Perry show up with the Young Bucks. Security tries to make sure he can't get in, but the Young Bucks pull their power card and say, no, he's coming in with us. It's okay. And later on, you have the Young Bucks leaving Tony Khan's office, and they set up basically a meet and greet for Jack Perry and Tony Khan so they can kind of bury the hatchet. Well, fast forward to the end of the night, Jack Perry, Tony Khan are in the ring. Next thing you know, Jack Perry gut punches Tony Khan. They're calling it a TK driver now. It used to be the Meltzer driver. And a TK driver, Tony Khan. And he's laid out. He is sold like he has been shot 87 times. I guess the story goes when he went into the back in a closed set, he was selling. When he was in the war room for the Jags, he was selling a neck brace. So Tony Khan is selling this. Kayfabe still lives, which is great. You got to see Shad Khan come out with his awesome mustache. This was all levels of good TNA, weird WCW, campy, funny, possibly might be able to build something here. This was a weird ball of wax. This had a lot going on with it, right? There's a lot of stuff we can draw comparisons to over the histories of wrestling, right? It was, like I said, it was serious. It was funny. It was weird. It was different. It was, like I said, it was a lot of good TNA that we used to get. It was a little bit of bad TNA. It was some weird WCW vibes. This angle has gotten a lot of people talking. It's gotten quite a bit of praise, and it's got quite a bit of detractors from it. What is your take on what took place with Tony Khan, Jack Perry, and the Young Bucks at the end of Dynamite on Wednesday?
See, that's tough because when it was replayed in the draft room, just now look, we're marks, we watch everything. Just the casual people that were just kind of learning about it because they saw Tony Khan wearing a neck brace, and everybody's like, huh? Why is the owner of the Jaguars wearing a neck brace? And the wrestling guy, there's a lot of wrestling.
How weird is that when you got to explain that to like sports writers and you're like, well, it's a wrestling bit.
No, somebody else did, man. There's a lot of smart people in that room. And so somebody else jumped in and talked about it eloquently and just basically described that, you know, these two guys are pretending that they're like now running the company and they're going rogue and blah, blah, blah. So it was a great description. But then when NFL Network showed the move, they looked at it and said, that move doesn't look all that dangerous. Well, it is dangerous, but the way that move does, you can see clearly that the EVPs fall on their knees. So you can see the move, the way it's done to protect somebody. I would have did a pile driver. I mean, I think that, you know, I know it's their move. I know it's basically just jumping off and getting the guy to land like in a tombstone. But the move that sent Eric Bischoff to the moon was getting piled drive through a table by the outsiders. It had more impact. I would have used a table. I would have set the table up and just throw Tony Khan on your shoulders and do a running power slam into the table. It has a little bit more impact. Whereas people seeing it kind of look like that looks fake because there's no way you can pile drive a guy on his head. You got to land on your knees. But everyone caught on like, okay, this is what you're doing. So in the end, It delivered what it was supposed to do. And for him to sell it, many people were saying, hey, the first night, you got to sell it a little bit better. You can't be moving your head all that much. He did a much better job the next day by keeping his head stiff and selling it the right way. But Tony Khan's trying to get himself involved. This is kind of a tried and true thing. It's not original. I mean, it's not original. So we've seen it before. It does kind of look like the WCW playbook and the WWE playbook where, oh my God, the Booker's getting killed. If you remove your opinion of Tony Khan, I think the best way to handle it, if you're a listener, is to focus on the EVPs, who now have four strong members in a group that's badass as hell. You got the Young Bucks, you got Okada, and you got Jack Perry. And this version of the Elite, if you just kind of use Tony Khan as the first prop and the first guy that gets destroyed, don't focus on Tony Khan. He's a pawn, and he's a scrawny guy that just kind of always looks like he's going to get bullied. If you just view what the EVPs do now, let's let them get to some bigger prizes. And now they're the tag champs. It was a good match, and it lived up to expectations, all kinds of athletic. And I just think that if you shift your attention away from Tony Khan, you'll be happier watching that product.
Yeah, and look, this sets up for a return of Kenny Omega. He's supposed to show up next Wednesday on Dynamite. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how this plays out. I'm assuming he's going to address the Young Bucks. There'll be some back and forth. I do not know if he'll actually be able to wrestle. Again, he's dealing with diverticulitis, so we'll see if he's in any condition to fully participate. But the assumption is Kenny Omega will be addressing this, sticking up for Tony Khan, I'm assuming. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out and where we go from here. Maybe you can get some good storylines from this. You're getting a ton of press from it. You had a guy like Pat McAfee, who works for your rival, talking about it on ESPN and doing a fantastic job of talking about it on ESPN. So it'll be, like I said, it'll be interesting to see where they can pivot from this. Look, coming off of a couple weeks ago where they released the security footage of CM Punk, a lot of bad press, a lot of people bagging on them. So now this week you're doing this. And again, this has been a little bit of a mixed bag. It seems like it's a little bit more positive than it is negative when you hear people talk about it. The fact that Tony Khan's still selling it with the NFL draft going on, so a ton of eyes are getting seen and having to have this situation explained, and it's forcing people to go find the clip, to watch the clip. It's really smart. It's good marketing. See if you can build off of it. You got one of your best wrestlers, one of the best wrestlers in the world, coming back to your show this Wednesday. This is a perfect time to capitalize on it. We'll see if AEW can turn it into some good stuff. Let's switch gears. Let's go WWE. Monday night, we had a vacant women's championship, and we ended up having a battle royal to crown the new women's champion. Becky Lynch wins this battle royal. I don't know if this was the best call to put the belt on her. Now, I understand why you would, right? When your ace goes down, what do? You turn to your other ace. Becky Lynch is a stalwart for this company. Becky Lynch holds this company down. When this company needs something, there are a few people that this company turns to help elevate and help market it and to put a belt on it to keep things secure and keep a division basically at ease. It's Becky Lynch, it's Charlotte, it's Bianca. These are the people that they put those belts on that they trust them with, because they know when they are in that position. Bayley's another one. When they put those belts on these competitors, the division is set up fine. Things are calm. You know that you have your top dog. Whether Becky Lynch actually is wearing the belt or Becky Lynch is not wearing the belt, she is still a top dog in WWE. It only makes sense for her to run around with it. Again, I don't know if it was the best call to do this, though. I get why you did it. I understand why you did it. In the end, this battle royal came down to the person that you picked to put the belt on in Nia Jax, who looks a little bit thinner. I don't know. It might have been the gear she was wearing. I thought she looked like she lost a little bit of weight, and I thought she was looking really, really good. Liv Morgan, the person who I thought you should put the belt on, and then Becky Lynch. Again, I'm going Liv Morgan all day, every day. Again, I understand why they did Becky Lynch. I think there's more storyline that you can build out with Liv Morgan, and there's more you can do with Liv Morgan, especially when Rhea comes back. Sounds like Rhea's going to be on the shelf for anywhere from 3 to 6 months. We'll see what takes place there. But I'm going Liv Morgan still. Don't hate the idea of Becky Lynch winning the championship and being the champion. She deserves it. Again, she is an ace. This is why you have them in place. When things go sideways, you put the belt right back on them. Everything is fine. But I think you could get more run. You could get more story. On top of that, you can really help elevate another wrestler like Liv Morgan. get her into that upper stratosphere where you now have multiple aces like you had before when Rhea Ripley was there. What was your thoughts on Becky Lynch getting the call to win the Battle Royal and become the new women's world champ? Would you still have stuck with Nia Jax, or are you okay with Becky Lynch getting the belts?
Yeah, look, no, I know what you're saying, that the belt can elevate, but I don't think that's what they're doing with that. I think every winner so far in the Triple H era has been the best. And I think you can clearly see that's what it's supposed to represent. Who is the best? Not who is rising and who is somebody that can get a little bit of rub off the belt. That's dangerous to do, because when that person's not considered the best, then you have a situation where the credibility of the title takes a hit. And right now, all the champions that have kind of come through in the new Triple H era, you kind of feel like, okay, they're probably top of the heap in regards to what they're doing. So I think that the world title has to be important. Now, had Becky Lynch stayed on vacation, then we could make the argument for Liv Morgan or Nia Jax, because you can make the argument for Nia Jax. She's the top heel. She's established herself. She's busted up people. She's taken the grind. She's done some things. There's memories there. Liv Morgan needs to do a little bit more because she's had those long injury spells and been away from the company for a little bit. But she's starting to get herself up there, and she's starting to do some things. So with a Becky Lynch in the fold, she's the best, and it's legitimate. Did I wish she stayed on vacation? Probably. But in the end, with Becky Lynch being back, there's a lot more storylines that you can pay attention to that are very intriguing, very interesting, and she'll draw. She's credible. She's among the best, and there's a lot of stories that you can tell that will draw some money, put some asses in the seats.
Do you feel like she's overpushed? That was a lot of the crying that you heard on the internet, is that she's overpushed. They kind of cram her down our throats.
Well, yeah, it's kind of been her See, that's what you're always going to risk hearing when the gimmick is I'm the best, I'm the man. And right now, she is, but there are quickly others that are nipping at her heels, like a Jade, like a Bianca Belair, like a Nia Jax.
Jade's got some time.
Yeah. Well, she's not the best wrestler, but she's kind of getting into that over spot. Yeah, she's
got
to push.
She's over. She has a very good persona.
Yeah, she's the flavor of the month, and everybody's loving what they're seeing based on the way they presented her as a star. But yeah, now she's got to earn it. And for Becky Lynch, yeah, that's the thing, is that, and here's the tough part, and I guess it's going to be the question that, you know, we got to ask and go down this road, is can these women put together matches? Because here's unfortunately the last big match we saw, there was a big hype, and it's not a fair comparison, but if you compare Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch to Ospreay and Danielson, it's night and day. There's no comparison that those guys delivered at the highest level of spots, psychology, storytelling, and execution. A lot of the moves were crisp, understood, flowed from one to the next. False finishes, false moves, reversals, and just the time that they were given. I don't know. I don't think I'd want to see Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch for 35 minutes. So,
you know, I've often wondered this in just kind of watching different women wrestlers and watching them get into the ring and then watching them move around the ring. I wonder if the ring is a bit of a hindrance for them. Mm. With the way the ring is set up, right? You can watch the guys hit the ropes and really explode off of the ropes. Now, when they do that, basically the ring rope is hitting like mid square in the back. It might hit at the butt, or might hit just above, or maybe just below the butt. But they have the ability to kind of lean into the ropes and then springboard basically off of them. With the women, when they hit the ropes, I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's like they stop because the rope's at their head. And it's just like it's almost like they're going to get decapitated.
Yeah.
So I wonder if some of, you know, what we see and what we have going on is more because the way the ring is structured compared to how the women are anatomically built. That's why I think a person like Jade can get around the ring so well, because Jade's a little bit taller. I think as soon as Jade Cargill kind of figures it out and she gets more natural in the ring, she is going to be a star, because physically she is a taller person and she has more mass. I think she will look more crisp in the ring once she kind of figures it out and gets more comfortable. But I wonder oftentimes if the ring is a bit of a hindrance. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it can be, because it's just also too, I think the storytelling and the when guys clothesline each other, you can see the massive collision. When women kind of do stuff, it doesn't feel like it's that impactful. You know what I mean? It's not like there was a China that can throw someone through a table. Rhea's starting to get there, but again, some of her move sets and some of the way the matches are presented, it doesn't make it look like Becky Lynch is the man. You know what I mean? It doesn't. The wrestling can be stepped up a little bit with the storytelling, the false finishes, and the impact of some of the moves. So you're absolutely right. I just think that the women can step it up just a little bit more technical, a little bit more, you know, having matches that have a little bit more of a lasting impact.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. There's some work that can be done on the ladies' end. Let's get into what took place on SmackDown. We had the draft. We've got the NFL draft going on. We've got the WWE draft going on. WWE draft will take place over two nights. It'll take place starting this past Friday with SmackDown and then moving to Monday Night Raw. SmackDown was four rounds. Monday Night Raw is going to be six rounds. On Friday night, SmackDown got to go first with their first pick. They took Bianca Belair. Raw took Jey Uso. SmackDown then followed up with Carmelo Hayes. Seth Rollins was then taken by Monday Night Raw. Those were the first round draft picks. I'm wondering if there were any surprises. As we moved into the second round, Randy Orton was selected by SmackDown. Bron Breakker now switching brands, going from SmackDown to Monday Night Raw. Nia Jax moving to SmackDown. Liv Morgan staying on Monday Night Raw. In the third round, you had LA Knight staying on SmackDown. Monday Night Raw seen Ricochet. SmackDown ends up getting Solo Sikoa, Tama Tonga, and Paul Heyman. They're deeming this as the bloodline, as Roman Reigns has made himself ineligible to be drafted. Ricochet is staying on Monday Night Raw, which no big surprise there. Samantha Irvin does the announcing. Sheamus is now going to Monday Night Raw. AJ Styles staying on SmackDown. Again, no surprise here. It kind of felt like he gave it away when you opened up with Cody Rhodes and AJ Styles signing a contract. It kind of only made sense that AJ Styles was going to stay on SmackDown. Chad Gable, Otis, Maxxine Dupri, and Akira Tozawa are staying on Raw. SmackDown gets Andrade. NXT call-up. Kenya James goes to Raw. We'll see what she can bring to the table. SmackDown gets Cedric Alexander and Ashante the Adonis. Raw gets Alba Fire and Isla Dawn. SmackDown gets Baron Corbin. So Baron Corbin getting the call back up. Raw gets Ivar. SmackDown gets Luke Gallows, Karl Anderson, and Meechan. They're kind of staying in that AJ Styles circle. Shayna Baszler and Zoe Starks both go to Raw. So there is the wrap-up of the draft picks that we had from SmackDown. Anything surprise you or anything stick out to you with any of those draft picks?
Well, I'll say this about the draft. I don't even think you needed to have it, because if you're really going to have...
No, I don't think so either.
If you're going to have four superstars change, you can just kind of just say, we've held the draft behind the scenes and here's what we got. These two superstars are going to SmackDown and these two superstars are going to Raw. And let's get back to the action, because you spent a whole lot of time saying Cody Rhodes is going to be on SmackDown, and you spent a lot of time saying AJ Styles is going to be on SmackDown. Everybody's like, okay, it's kind of what we already know. You know what I mean?
Right.
The impact.
And in other news, water is wet.
Yeah, the impact of the decisions did not resonate throughout the show. I thought it was cool that Cody Rhodes came out and then Triple H came out, so that was cool to see.
That was cool.
But if you pay attention online, I don't know if you heard it through the broadcast. There's a moment, and someone highlighted online, where they go, and the next pick in the third round, Raw selects, and someone yells out Chris Benoit.
no way, really?
Yeah, you can hear it online. It was kind of funny to see. It probably was so faint you couldn't hear it on television. But
somebody, I could not hear it on TV.
Yeah, you go check it out, because the way Triple H kind of grins, I don't know if you heard it or he was just ready to move on to the next pick, but... It's funny to hear it. I'm going to try to look it up. But yeah, it was a comical moment. Look, I don't like the draft. I just think that, you know what? I would do it Family Feud style. You just, you know what? I don't need look, it's not a draft. Like, it's fake. You can't sell that. So I would just do it Family Feud style. You get a board, it gets Raw, and it has SmackDown, and then it has eight names, and then every so often you go back to it, and it just flips over, and there's a name, and you keep it moving. And you get that bell sound, ding, and oh, okay, AJ Styles, da-da-da-da, and then you get the graphic, and you move on. I just think it takes up too much of the show. I don't like the way the draft is presented on television, at least.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of it myself. So, you know, with Alyssa being now a wrestling fan, these are kind of some firsts for her. I don't know if she's gone through a draft or she's actually paid attention to the draft before. And she was like, why are we doing this? And I was like, I don't know. I was like, it's just a way to shake up the roster. She's like, it's kind of dumb, right? And I was like, it is kind of dumb. Especially when, like you said, for the most part, everybody is staying where they're staying. Like, there's not a lot of people moving around here. And the way these draft picks are done, like, let's be honest, right? I think the biggest surprise that I took away was Bianca Belair and Jey Uso being the number one picks for both Raw and SmackDown. You mean to tell me if you've got the Bloodline, which has been a money-making machine, and you've got a guy like Seth Rollins who basically held up your company to get you through WrestleMania and then essentially obliterated his knee for you, you mean to tell me that those two, that faction and that guy are out there, those aren't going to be your number one picks? You know what I'm saying? So like the mentality of it just doesn't make sense in real life. And look, I know wrestling is supposed to be one of those things where you suspend some disbelief and you kind of get taken on a fun ride. But we've established that the more real it is, the better it is. So this is just very campy. I get it. It's a way to kind of move talent around and give an explanation as to why you now have different feuds going on and how you get one guy to another brand, but it is not necessarily the ideal way to do these things. What was your show of the week this week?
I would give it to Dynamite, but I just can't. I can't do something like that in regards to how everything goes. So in my mind, I'm gonna give it to Raw. I thought that the way you're kind of elevating Chad Gable, the tag titles, everything going on, I thought Raw was the best show this week. It was very good wrestling. You're moving things forward, and you crowned a new champion. You set forth a new course, so I'm going to give it to Raw.
Yeah, I like the selection of Raw as well. Not just the Chad Gable stuff, which is interesting. At some point, his faction is going to turn on him because he's being a bit of a dick, and I like that. I think that's an interesting story. Him as a heel, I think, is great as well. Helps give his character a bit of a refresh. As far as Raw goes too, you're getting the little nuggets, you're getting the little QR codes for Uncle Howdy. Hope everybody's been paying attention and following along to those, what's going on with that. Sounds like Eric Rowan is coming back and is going to be looped into that story. Sounds like Braun Strowman is going to be looped into that story. There is some conversation. I don't know what the contract situation of a guy like Eric Young is, but there's been some rumors that maybe Eric Young could come back and be looped into that story. It really does feel like with the Uncle Howdy storyline, they're going to really pay some homage to Bray Wyatt and really kind of give that the send off that he was trying to do with it. So we'll see. And plus you get Bo Dallas back, and we'll see what Bo Dallas can bring to that character and kind of really liven it up and freshen it up. So it'll be really, really interesting what takes place. You ready for some news and notes?
Hit me with this week's professional wrestling news and notes. Maybe some stock watches? Let's see what's going on. What made your list?
All right, so some major contract news coming out of WWE. Reports are Finn Balor and Damian Priest have re-upped with WWE. Fightful Select provided an update noting that Balor was expecting to sign a long-term contract extension to stay with WWE. Balor's contract was set to expire within the next couple of months. The report notes that WWE was looking to sign Balor to a multi-year big money offer with the company. The belief is that Balor would have major interest outside of the company and that specifically AEW is looking to sign potential free agents this summer. AEW has squirreled some money away to sign the likes of a guy like Seth Rollins if he hits free agency, Becky Lynch if she hits free agency, and Drew McIntyre. These three people have contracts coming due very soon and have not re-signed yet. At least per reports, they've not re-signed yet. The report also notes that Balor's name was on AEW's list of potential names that they were keeping an eye on. Balor on Monday confirmed this when he was saying confirmed that he was staying with WWE in a post on Twitter. The assumption is that Damian Priest signed a very similar deal to the one that Balor got. The two Judgment Day members will be with WWE for the next few years. This AEW star set for a return very, very soon. So kind of giving it away before they gave it away on Dynamite, the account for the Canadian Life Center in Winnipeg announced that Kenny Omega would be making an appearance on next week's episode of Dynamite in his hometown of Winnipeg. It has not yet been announced what the role of Omega is and what it will be on the show. Again, Omega has been off of AEW television since December of 2023 when he announced that he would be out of action due to diverticulitis. He had a match planned for the AEW World Tag Team Championships with Chris Jericho against Ricky Starks and Big Bill at World's End. That had to be canceled. Again, it'll be interesting to see what he does. I think he's going to come to the aid of Tony Khan, and he's going to get in a little bit of a mix-up with the Elite, and I think there's going to be some words. I don't know if there'll be any physical action that'll be displayed. I'm hoping we get the renewal of Omega Okada, because that was incredible years ago. So we'll see what takes place, but pay attention to Dynamite this week with Kenny Omega coming back. Now, Vince McMahon is done with WWE and TKO. On Friday evening, Brendan Coffey of Sportico reported that McMahon submitted filings to sell his final 8.02 million shares of TKO stock. When the sale of the stock is completed, McMahon will be completely divested from the company that he created and then sold to TKO. With the sale, McMahon is set to earn more than $776 million. It's like this dude has a lotto ticket. It's unreal. McMahon, over the course of, say, the last 6 to 8 months, has been selling off bits and pieces of his shares. And when I say bits and pieces, I mean millions and thousands of shares of his stock, and just slowly kind of cashing stuff in. This final sale will completely remove him from, like I said, the company he created and then the company that he partnered with and sold to TKO. I kind of want to get your opinion on this. Like, if I'm Stephanie McMahon, or if I'm Shane, or if I'm Triple H, I'm pissed. Like, I am pissed off that this old man kind of lost his mind at the end, and nobody could get the company away from him before he did some dumb shit, like sell it to TKO, because that's a company that family had owned. Like, Vince got that company from his father, and he took that company to new heights. I feel like Stephanie and Triple H could have helped take it to new heights. There are stories and speculations going around that Vince and Shane had bits of falling out because Shane was so grossed out by Vince's behavior towards women and the way he conducted himself. I don't necessarily think Shane had the best mind for wrestling, but I feel like Stephanie, and you can obviously see Triple H do, I feel like if you could have just got the old man out of the way, those two could have really helped take WWE to the place that it needed to go, and you wouldn't have to worry about TKO. We wouldn't have to worry about ring sponsors on the mats. We wouldn't have to worry about having NXT matches in octagons. We wouldn't have to worry about some of the TKO interference that we ended up getting right around WrestleMania. To me, it feels like you really burned bridges with your kids because you lost your mind and you kind of wanted to cash in before you cashed out. Well, what are your thoughts on Vince selling off all of his stock, being completely done with WWE? And what do you think that does to the relationship he has with his kids?
I'm just disappointed that it doesn't feel like Vince has learned his lesson. I don't know if you're hearing the rumors about what he wants to do with the money, but I'm hearing he's thinking and considering of starting up All Spectacular Superstars. And I just think that when you look at it and you go, wait a minute, those three letters, he really wants the crowd going ASS, ASS. And you're like, oh, Vince, you got to learn your lesson, man. You can't start ASS in this day and age. So I hope he doesn't take his money and start a new promotion, and especially calling it something like that. But let's just hope that he just goes away in retirement. The lineage goes on. Look, he doesn't own it in name. He's got friends there still. Look, in the end, Triple H is a relative. Stephanie's back in management. The McMahons will always have a place. And look, you can always debate whether he should have went corporate or anything like that. But when you start a business, everyone's goal sometimes, really, I think 9 out of 10 business people is not to have a family business that I can pass down to little Johnny and little Shane and little Stephanie. It's, okay, I want to, when I'm 75 years old, sell 400,000 shares and collect $2 billion, and then I can go home and I can start ASS or whatever I want to call the next company that I decide to run, or I just sit and retire it and sprinkle it all over the world. And for him, he might just buy politicians, he might spend it on this, he might spend it on lawyers, he might spend it on whatever, but in the end, he started a business, he founded it, it has a legacy. Triple H, look, he took it to the next level. Eventually, everybody runs out of time, and the vision is there. And for Vince, look, WWE is a lasting legacy of the work he did. Like, you think of WWE, we're never going to not think of Vince McMahon. It's written in stone. Now, was he a great person? No. But in the end, he's probably looking at it like, I started a business, I made the business spectacular, it's going to have a legacy, it's an entertainment product that's going to be all over the world, look what I founded. And now I get to retire with $3 billion. It's unbelievable. And look, he basically drew the financial rewards for the work that he did. And it's just unfortunate that the character allegedly couldn't match the brilliant, creative business mindset that he had. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that, you know, corporate types sometimes have those out of control egos that sometimes results in these type of alleged actions, and it's unfortunate. And just outside of the sexual allegations, just the way you kind of got a sense of how he treated people sometimes when they weren't useful to him, probably there were some things he could go back and say, I could have handled differently with the death of Owen Hart, with some contract stuff with people, the way in which certain wrestlers would allegedly use steroids in their health, the way in which some wrestlers, you know, have passed away because of the lack of unions and the healthcare back in the day. So there's a lot of things that you can go back and say he could have did differently. But big picture wise, he started a company. It's now a global brand. He cashes out. And to me, the best way to focus is to focus on the Triple H era, because my God, the way in which the product has taken a step forward has been awesome. One thing though, I will critique: not really a fan of some of the new camera angles. The one with the tag team with the Miz, I didn't like. I don't want to see the wrestler and the background of the crowd. That looked too gimmicky to me. I get it. It's new. It's advanced. It's, oh, look at this camera lens I can try and play with. I'm sure Kenny's still has a hard-on for all the camera gimmicks that they tried. I'm more into the old school shooting of wrestling. I can see it. I can tell they're trying new stuff. But to me, in my opinion, in my taste, my mind is not fully ready to go there yet to see the wrestlers and then a faded out background and all the camera gimmicks that y'all that love that kind of shit can handle. So we'll see if it grows on me. But right now, a little too gimmicky, a little too theatrical for my taste.
I gotcha. We'll see kind of what they do as far as camera angles go and kind of new gimmicks, new things that they're kind of trying to incorporate. Like I said, with this partnership with TKO, we're getting a lot more different stuff. It's just kind of out of the realm of WWE, and they're trying to integrate it and they're trying to assimilate it into the product. So it'll be interesting to see what takes place going forward with TKO's influence. All that being said, that's going to do it for this week's news and notes.
Make sure you follow Adam on Twitter at AdamRSTROZ. Follow the network at Detroit Podcast. If there's something you've agreed with or not agreed with, let us know. We love debating the world of professional wrestling. And because it was crazy, I was at the draft. I just got in to the entry level where you get to walk through the draft. It's a big ordeal. And, you know, I didn't know who was going to be there, didn't know what was going on. I just wanted to go to the stage, walk around. All of a sudden, everyone's kind of seeing this guy doing content. And it's like, wait a minute, that's Kofi Kingston. And he's doing content, doing interviews. And I'm standing there going, this is Kofi Kingston. Wow, he looks a little older in person than he does on television. And you realize, man, the wear and tear gets you. But walk up right to him. I'm standing right there. He's doing content. And I'm like, I'm just going to pull out my phone and start filming. And so I did the gimmick. I marked out and was like, oh, you're the best world champion of all time. He got it. Because at first I wasn't exactly sure. Seeing him in person face to face, it didn't look like him. It looked like a 10-year-old older version of the Kofi that you see on TV. but he did it. I did the world champion, and he did it. And he's like, yeah. And so I had to confirm that it was him, but I had a good feeling it was him. He gave me a towel. We had a good interaction. And after I shut off the camera and stopped being stupid and marked out, I said, hey, man, thank you so much for your time in the ring. I always say that to wrestlers, man, thank you for the time in the ring. You've been very entertaining. You're one of the best. And he said, thank you. We shared a hug, and he was like so excited to be there. But only knock I can say is he's a huge Patriots fan. He gave me a Patriots towel. Yeah. I'm like, what the hell? Ew. But it was so cool because I just, within 4 minutes, I see a WWE superstar. So that was cool to kick off the draft. I loved it. Got to share it a little bit. And obviously, the papers knew he was there. They did a story on him. I'm like, God darn it. I got to learn how to realize when these appearances are going to take place, because they don't tell me. They don't ever tell me. Oh, a wrestling podcaster that works for SI doesn't know when what's going on. But hey, it was organic and it was freaking cool because I just walked up right on him. And that's kind of how it was. That was within the first 5 minutes of me walking into the draft, and there's Kofi Kingston. So it was a cool experience, man. These guys are always cool. They always, you know, they always show respect. I didn't ask for an autograph. I, of course, asked for the selfie. He was super cool. I got a present, and I got to meet a former world champion at the 2024 NFL draft. I can't wait for next week. Man, and guys, too, pay attention because Carmelo Hayes' stock is on the rise. When you could put a match like that with Cody Rhodes, a lot of people are talking about it. Pay attention. The man can do his business, and he's going to be somebody that is going to do some things. And then also Trick Williams. When you hear Whoop That Trick on AEW, you know your shit is getting over. And when you can transcend companies, pay attention to Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams, stars of the future. They're going to do their thing, because I can't wait to break down everything in the world of wrestling next week on the latest and greatest episode of the Doc and Jock Wrestling Podcast.